This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Tyrus.
I'm Liz Claman.
I'm Greg Jarrett. And this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. For the first time, the parents of a child who committed a mass shooting have been criminally convicted and sentenced for their roles in the crime. A legal decision not everyone's comfortable with.
If we're going to charge the parents criminally, why aren't they charging the school criminally? When the school is the one that wasn't in denial, the school is the one that said something's wrong here.
I'm Dave Anthony. House Republicans have delayed sending impeachment articles to the Senate where Democrats could dismiss the case against the head of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, accused of not securing the border.
11 million illegal crossings under Joe Biden's watch, under Secretary Mayorkas' watch, 2 million known gotaways, 250,000 young adults have been poisoned and murdered with fentanyl.
We speak with GOP Senator Roger Marshall.
And I'm Joe Concha. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
The parents of Ethan Crumbly were sentenced in Oakland County, Michigan, Tuesday. Jennifer and James had already been found guilty of four counts of involuntary manslaughter after Ethan murdered four classmates at Oxford High in November of 2021. 17-year-old Madison Baldwin was among the victims. Her mother, Nicole Beausoleil, read her victim impact statement before sentencing.
The passion that she had for everything and everyone was remarkable. I would catch myself watching her and thinking to myself, how lucky am I? I'm the one that gets to be her mom.
Raina St. Juliana's little sister, Hannah, was 14 when she was killed.
I can't convey what losing Hannah has done to me. I miss her with every breath I take. I believe the word sad is inappropriate to use because it does nothing to capture the hurt or the way my soul shattered.
During trial, it came out that Ethan Crumbly had texted someone revealing that he'd asked his father for help to take him to a doctor. He said his dad gave him some pills and told him to suck it up. That was months before the shooting. The day of the shooting, school officials called his parents in after teachers had viewed a picture Ethan had drawn of guns, a person shot, with the words, "The thoughts won't stop, help me." His parents left him there at school that day. And while Jennifer said she was remorseful and lives in her own internal prison,
we felt confident and trust in the professional's advice to let him stay in school that day. Quote, he does not pose a threat to himself or others.
Ethan's father, James, said he was so sorry for what his son had done, but that the full truth had not come out.
You know that what my son did, I was not aware of. Or that he was planning it, or that he obtained access to the firearms in my house.
The judge in the case, Cheryl Matthews, said while parents aren't expected to be psychic,
these convictions confirm repeated acts or lack of acts that could have halted an oncoming runaway train. About repeatedly ignoring things that would make a reasonable person feel the hair on the back of their neck stand up.
She then sentenced them both to 10 to 15 years in prison. It's likely one or both will appeal.
To be completely honest, I am surprised at the sentence.
Jonas Bilbor is a criminal defense attorney and legal analyst.
However, I was listening to the sentencing hearing as it was going on, and I said to myself, these two people are going to prison. And before the sentencing hearing began, I really thought there was a possibility that this judge was going to either give them sentences on the low end or even give them time served. And the reason I thought that was, you know, for everything that we all know, this is a case of first impression. This is a case where two people were charged and ultimately convicted of a crime they did not commit, right? They were convicted of something that they failed to do. They failed to prevent a crime. And because it was so unusual, I thought, all right, This judge will see that for what it is. And even though these victims, oh my God, your heart has to go out to them. This was a horrific crime. But the person who shot the gun is behind bars. That a 15-year-old kid has gone to prison. He'll be there for the rest of his life with no chance of parole. That is justice. But to then take these parents and give them the top end of a sentence on a case that is so unusual just seems really, it's hard to swallow right now.
Jonna, how impactful were those impact statements? You know, they certainly seemed emotional. And virtually everyone noted that when Jennifer Crumbly took the stand in her own defense a couple months ago, she'd said, "I wouldn't have done anything differently." And all these family members remarked on that. They were appalled at that sentence. How much do the victims' words matter to the judge?
The victim impact statements, as they often are just completely heart-wrenching. And no matter what, whether you agree or disagree with the verdict, your heart has to go out to all of these families, the families of the children who died, the families of everyone who was injured. And every victim has a right by law, probably in every state, to make such a statement. That's why we see them. And I think it's good for families, for victims to do that. Where I think part of the problem lies is that a little inside baseball. I am confident that when Jennifer Crumbly was having conversations with her attorney, which we're never going to be privy to, in order to present her defense, I mean, remember, she took the stand, her husband didn't. There are certain, preparation. And so either her attorney advised her to say, "I wouldn't do anything different," because if she admitted otherwise, now she's admitting guilt. And her attorney could have kept her off the stand altogether. And then we would not be hearing that portion of her testimony coming from the victim impact statement. So that's a failure, in my opinion, of lawyering and representation more than anything else.
You know, James said he was sorry for what his son did. And Jennifer and James both said they wish they'd known more, that they couldn't have really known that this would happen. And they asked for, I think it was time served and probation. But the judge said before sentencing, as you heard, that, you know, this crossed the line, right? That these parents repeatedly ignored things that would make a reasonable person feel the hair on the back of her neck stand up. Was the judge essentially saying, "Guys, you're in denial. Like, you did play a bigger role here than you're grappling with"?
That's interesting, because you just used a word that's come out of my mouth in analyzing this case. And the reason it comes out of my mouth is, can you be a little bit more forgiving of a parent who is in denial when it comes to this kind of stuff, as opposed to what I think this judge was saying is, you weren't so much in denial. You completely ignored your child and all his pleas or cries for help, or all the warning signs, I would say, that came out during the trial. I think a lot of parents and a lot of people, it doesn't even have to be a parent, you can be, if you're not a professional psychiatrist, you might be in denial when you have a teenager who's exhibiting some signs of the trials and tribulations of growing up. That could be considered denial. But did they turn a blind eye and specifically just ignore? I think that's where the judge was going with this. And that may be the fine point that she was trying to make.
I mean, the obvious thing here, Jonna, right, is the novelty of this case. Does this remain a unique case, or has something shifted here that people should be concerned about, that the legal system is going down a different road here now with some of these mass shooting cases?
So the answer to that is both. It is still a unique case. It will always be a unique case. What will it change going forward for, you know, the country, so to speak? And I think that it still is a big leap for me, and maybe because it's hard to take my criminal defense hat off. It's a big leap for me to charge someone killing another human being. That's what involuntary manslaughter is, right? It's killing of another human being. It's just that you didn't intend for it to happen. I have a hard time with charging anybody with that when they didn't actively take a life. Where does that stop? Are we just going to compartmentalize it and say, if you are a parent and your kid is doing something strange and you don't do anything about it, you're going to be on the hook for whatever that kid does?
To that point, is it because it's a minor? It's your child. It's not just you knowing. It's not you living with a friend and your friend did something. That's not your responsibility. Does this case set a new precedent for saying you are responsible for your child?
This case will probably do that. And to that end, right, because it's a minor, because you are legally responsible for your children until they reach the age of 18, right? And Ethan was 15. Well, okay, let's look at the other side of that slippery slope. And the facts in this case were that the school that has control over your kids for 6 hours a day contacted the parents and said, we think something's up. Called the parents. The parents went to the school. They had a conversation with the school officials. School officials said, man, you should probably take him home. Parents said, we're not going to do that. And the school did not say, well, he can't stay here. He doesn't have to go home, but he can't stay here. Right. So, but they're not being charged criminally. And I don't think, I do not think for a second that the school should be charged criminally. I'm just making the slippery slope argument that if we're going to charge the parents criminally, why aren't they charging the school criminally when the school is the one that wasn't in denial? The school is the one that said something's wrong here. Look, I'm just talking because we have never seen this before. But I guess in part of your question might be, are we going to see it again? I mean, let's hope that we never have any other mass shootings. But, you know, the world is going to keep going and we might see this scenario again.
Andy McCarthy said on the channel after the sentencing, you know, similar to you, he's skeptical in a way that it sounds like you are as well. He made the point that this is what the civil process is for, that these parents, if you're going to go after them civilly. Does that, as a defense attorney yourself, does that sound right?
100% agree. And they will, right? The parents will be sued civilly, except there's nothing to get because they're going to prison. They're not, you know, maybe they have a house or something, but it's not going to cover the damages. The school will 100% be sued civilly and they will be on the hook. I promise you, the school's not going to escape civil liability in this. And we blur the lines, or at least we certainly did in this case, between civil and criminal responsibility, and the prosecution tested it. And the prosecution won.
John, before I let you go, one more thing. You know, I think at least Jennifer's attorney has said they're going to appeal. Perhaps both will. What's their best argument on appeal? Is it sort of what you've been saying, that this is a civil matter? This isn't, you know, this isn't a criminal. These charges shouldn't have been filed criminally against us.
Yes, I think that you can't. I think their best argument is going to be this is a case of first impression and you cannot assign criminal liability once removed. Meaning, you know, yes, our son is the one who committed the heinous offenses. He's been punished. You can't continue to go down the line and punish people who did not commit that crime with a crime. The state of Michigan charged these parents with killing four people. Okay, they charge them with killing four people, involuntary manslaughter. But I don't believe they charged them with what they actually did. And what they actually did was they recklessly endangered their own son. If you have a child under the age of 18, actually this could happen if you live in a house with anybody over 18, and they are exhibiting signs of any sort of psychosis or mental instability, and you allow them access to a gun without him shooting anybody, that is reckless endangerment. Nobody has to die. And they could have been charged with reckless endangerment. But they skipped right over that and charged them with killing four human beings. So I do think they have a good shot on appeal. And I'll tell you what, if they lose the appeal on that ground, then I think we're really in for it. It's going to be sort of the new thing that other states will also charge people and try them for. And that's just doesn't feel good. Doesn't feel good. Mm.
Jonas Philbor, criminal defense attorney and legal analyst, thank you so much for your thoughts and for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jessica. Always a pleasure.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. On December 22nd, 2000, three thieves held museum goers at gunpoint at the Swedish National Museum. The criminals stole three paintings, escaping with $42 million worth of stolen art. This week, I'm joined by retired FBI Special Agent Robert Whitman for a look at how he was able to secure and return the priceless works of art. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
This is Joe Concha with your Fox News commentary coming up.
It's only happened once before, 148 years ago, and we'll have to wait a little longer for the second impeachment case ever against a cabinet secretary. House Republicans have delayed sending articles to the Senate. Instead of today, they'll do it next week, blaming Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas for record illegal immigration.
We are witnessing a profound threat to our nation at the southern border. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and this entire administration has deliberately and willfully facilitated the criminal invasion of this country.
GOP Senator Ted Cruz, House Republicans approved two impeachment articles against Mayorkas, breach of public trust, and willfully and systematically refusing to enforce laws. Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis told the Fox News Rundown podcast the other day,
here's somebody who sent a memo directing CBP agents to not deport individuals even if they've been convicted of crime.
They also blame Mayorkas and President Biden for crimes migrants committed after coming here illegally, like the one charged with murdering Georgia student Lakin Riley. But Democrats, like Senator Richard Blumenthal, say Mayorkas has not committed any high crimes or misdemeanors.
We are spending time on a farce that we know the outcome, and it is simply a stunt.
And since Republicans don't have anywhere near the two-thirds vote required to convict and remove Mayorkas at any Senate trial, the Senate's majority leader, Chuck Schumer, may move to dismiss the case. Though House Speaker Mike Johnson, in a statement delaying delivering the articles, said there is no reason for the Senate to abdicate its responsibility to put Mayorkas on trial.
As far as I'm concerned, if Chuck Schumer does not allow there to be an impeachment trial, that is a nuclear option.
We talked to Senator Roger Marshall, a Republican from Kansas, just before the delivery was delayed till next week.
Much like Harry Reid back in 2013 dropped cloture from a 60-vote threshold to a simple majority when it came to dealing with judges. And so, remember how that came back and bit him in the behind several years later with Gorsuch.
Yeah, with Supreme Court nominee that President Obama did not get, that then President Trump got. And then he, you know, obviously the former President Trump got three overall to the Supreme Court in his 4 years in office. But I want to, on the impeachment issue here, what is the process? Now, the articles go to the Senate.
Yes.
It's not something that has to be in a trial, right? You don't have to have a trial.
So this would break precedent. And as far as I'm concerned, it would break Senate rules as well. And I don't think it honors the Constitution. And that's why I say this is the nuclear option that Chuck Schumer is about ready to drop, that this issue is so toxic to Joe Biden. It's so toxic to for Schumer to keep the Senate majority that he does not want this to be the story for the next week or three, that the evidence is so damning to the Democrat Party. They were willing to change 200 years of Senate precedent and not have a trial. So that's why I'm calling it the nuclear option. But that's what's supposed to happen is we get the articles brought over by the House. We're supposed to be sworn in as jurors and then have the trial. But what Chuck Schumer is going to do is jump right to tabling the procedure, tabling the impeachment, and you'll never hear the light of day again regarding the issue from the Senate.
Can you have points of order? Can you do things to extend that motion to table? There's a lot of procedural moves you can make typically right in the Senate.
There should be, but here's the problem is that Chuck Schumer as the leader will be recognized first by the Senate pro tem, Patty Murray. So Patty Murray will recognize him. He'll say, let's table it. We will yell and scream. We'll try to bring up points of order. And I don't want to give away all of our cards, but between whenever we do have the option, we're trying to figure out if we can do those points of order beforehand, but we will try to do points of order. But regardless, at the end of the day, Americans are smarter than this. They understand that there should be an impeachment trial. 11 million illegal crossings under Joe Biden's watch, under Secretary Mayorkas's watch, 2 million known gotaways, 250,000 young adults have been poisoned and murdered with fentanyl. And we could go on and on these statistics. The final vote, the final trial will be in November, 200 days, but there should be an impeachment trial. If any two of those Democrats would stand up and say, we want a trial, then we would have it. So by them supporting Chuck Schumer's tabling, they really are saying, we don't care about this open border. We don't care about the loss of Lake and Riley. We don't care about all those families who've lost loved ones to fentanyl poisoning.
So in these articles of impeachment, one of the articles claims that he's breached the public trust, Secretary Mayorkas, by lying to Congress that the border is not secure. Democrats have said, look, this is a policy dispute. There are no crimes, and that House Republicans failed to produce any evidence of a crime or high crime or misdemeanor under the impeachment articles. And some have called it, like Senator Blumenthal, a farce and a waste of time.
Well, again, let's go tell that to Lake and Riley's family. Let's go tell it to those people that are being human trafficked, all those things. But here's the big crime to me is that the Secure Fence Act of 2006 requires the secretary and the White House to maintain operational control of the border, to not allow illegal aliens in, to not allow terrorists in. I think when they don't enforce the law, that's the crime. And even the bigger crime than that is the way Mayorkas has handled parole. Parole is supposed to be handled on an individual case-by-case situation, but they have literally paroled tens of thousands of people at a time, probably up to close to 2 million people have been paroled by Joe Biden. So those are the laws that I think that they've broken. And I do think it rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors.
At the same time as you're dealing with the impeachment articles coming over from the House, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has said that he is not at all focused on these impeachment proceedings. And even if you had a trial, he wouldn't have to be there. Is that correct, Senator?
It is correct that he would not have to be there. I do think that anyone that's being impeached, it's like saying you're being sued and you don't pay attention to it. So I do think he's paying attention. I think America is paying attention more importantly. And I think there's great questions. Americans right now want someone held accountable. This is the number one defining issue of this election for the president and for the Senate majority, for the House majority as well. This is the number one defining issue. This is what people are worried about, that every state is now a border state. So I expect fireworks to be going off on both sides of the House.
Now, a couple of your Republican colleagues from the House, Ken Buck and also Mike Gallagher, they voted against impeachment. It still ultimately passed. But they voted against it, and the concern that they have is that it sets a bad precedent. I mean, this is only the second time in history that a cabinet member has been impeached. The first one in 1876, he resigned before there was even the trial. So they fear that it sets a precedent that any administration's secretaries could just be impeached by the other party because they don't like their policies. Do you think that's true? Do you see what their logic is on that?
I respect where they're coming from. But again, the people of Kansas drive what my priorities are. And the number one concern for the people of Kansas remains this open border, the safety and security of their families. They are demanding some type of accountability. I think that this impeachment process is the number one way to hold Joe Biden accountable for this open border. He's had every chance to close it. He could shut it down the border yesterday if he desired to. Again, ultimately, the people will decide. We, the people, will decide in November. I respect where they're coming from, but I think that Secretary Mayorkas should be impeached, and that's why we have the trial.
Senator, he's going to say, the president's going to say on the campaign trail, already has, that it's Republicans who've blocked border security with a bill that was bipartisan when it was formed to try to slow the tide of illegal immigration. Why were you and most Republicans now against that measure?
Well, look, Dave, I disagree with the premise. The House passed H.R. 2, which actually would secure the border and actually make a difference. The final bill that was presented to us actually would have made the crisis even worse. It would have even opened up the gates even more so. It greased the skids. So the bill that was given to us as an option on the Senate side was a non-starter. But Chuck Schumer has been sitting on H.R. 2 that passed the House over a year ago and has never been debated in Judiciary Committee. That's where it should have been debated. But again, this is a toxic issue to the Democrats. They want no part of it. And again, Americans get this. This is why this is their number one concern, is the open southern border, the safety and security of their families.
There is another option other than a trial. There have been in the past in the Senate a way through federal judge impeachment cases to form a committee that would investigate the charges. Would you support that if that's another chance to extend this beyond tabling and dismissing the charges?
Well, Dave, that would not be my first choice, nor Americans' first choice. I would say that that's not a nuclear option, at least, that it is, like you said, it has precedent. I think it should be something that we would consider. I would love to see a vote up or down on that. I would much prefer the public trial. I think that's what's being called for right now. But I think you make a great point. I do think that that's an option, and would love to debate that and look a little bit. What do the details of that look like? You know, the devil's always in the details. But it's a great point.
Now, the House is also investigating the impeachment of President Biden over overseas business dealings related to the Biden family and whether or not he was involved. He denies it. Republicans continue to investigate. If that were to lead to an impeachment, do you think that the same thing would happen? They would just try to dismiss the charges? Are we seeing how that would play out? And do you think we should go on that one? Do you think the Republicans in the House should do that?
Well, I think that's exactly my point, Dave, on the consequences of the Democrats going nuclear. You know, look, I would support welcome the impeachment articles on Joe Biden as well. Do I think that's a political reality? Probably not.
Senator Roger Marshall, Republican from Kansas, on this day when the impeachment articles go to the Senate for Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and you'll soon be a juror. Thanks very much, Senator. We appreciate it.
You bet, Dave. Let's all pray for our nation and pray for wisdom over here. Thanks so much for having us.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. 19 feral cats are now living the high life in the presidential palace in Mexico. They were given free reign of the lush gardens and historic colonial halls in one of the most iconic buildings in the country long ago. And now they made history after President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador declared them living fixed assets, the first animals in Mexico to receive the title. The investment term fixed assets usually applies to buildings and furniture, but applying it to cats, Lopez Obrador's government has obligated the country's treasury to give the cats food and care for the rest of their lives, even after the leader leaves office in October. The cats walk into meetings, interviews, wander on camera. Some greet tourists while others take a lick of ice cream from staff. The palace is nestled in the heart of Mexico City and is the seat of Mexico's executive branch. It was built upon the former palace of indigenous emperor Moctezuma. Ironically, his ancient Aztec culture honored hairless dogs, not cats. 19 vaccinated and sterilized cats live in the building full time, but many more come and go. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Starting April 15th, the Fox News Podcast Network launches a new fast-paced daily quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Joe Concha.
What's on your mind?
At this stage of his presidency, President Biden is polling lower than every occupant of the Oval Office since Jimmy Carter in 1980. His support among Black, Hispanic, young voters has dropped precipitously since taking office. But support is also falling in one unlikely place, Hollywood. Just last week, for example, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, arguably the biggest star on the planet, announced during an interview with Fox News' Will Cain on Fox and Friends weekend that he will not endorse Biden this election season after throwing his weight behind the Democrat 4 years ago. The Rock, when asked by Will Cain who he's going to endorse this year, The Rock responded, quote, "Am I going to do it again this year? The answer is no. I realize now going into this election, I will not do that. My goal is to bring the country together," unquote. Johnson would not share, however, who he's thinking of voting for, stating the decision will be a private one. The Rock bailing on Biden is not a one-off, by the way, not even close. Singer Cardi B, who has more than, get this, 168 million followers on Instagram alone, took to that platform last year to denounce Joe Biden, whom she endorsed in 2020. Quote, "I'm endorsing no presidents no more," the rap megastar declared. She talked about ongoing wars, endless wars, the fact that we can't fund two wars. And then Cardi B brought it back to New York City, where they are doing budget cuts on sanitation and education and police. And she says this expletive is getting out of hand. Therefore, she will not endorse Biden either. Snoop Dogg, another rapper who will not be backing Biden again this time around, instead sharing during a January interview warm feelings for Trump. Quote, "Trump ain't done nothing wrong to me. He has done only great things for me. He pardoned Michael Harris. So I have nothing but love and respect for Donald Trump." That's what Snoop Dogg said. Remember, Michael Harris co-founded Death Row Records and had been in prison on drug offenses before Trump's pardon freed him. Now, Snoop backing Trump is especially noteworthy given he once filmed a video that included a mock assassination of Trump in 2017. Trump, who was president at the time, had called for the rapper to be imprisoned. So this is quite the turnaround. Add some more names to the list. Michael Rappaport, one of Donald Trump's most vocal critics in 2020 going into that election, says now that voting for Trump is, quote, on the table, unquote. And Charles Barkley, who has voted Democrat in nearly every election, teed off on Biden and the Democratic Party on his show recently. Quote, "The reason I think the Democratic Party and Mr. Biden, President Biden, is losing Black votes is they only care about Black people every 4 years," Barkley said. Biden received 92% of the Black vote in 2020, but a recent New York Times poll in March shows Biden receiving just 66% of Black voters. That's a 26-point drop. Overall, that same poll shows Trump topping Biden nationally by 5 points and leading in every swing state. If Biden is losing young voters, Black voters, Hispanic voters, that should be just about enough to make him a one-term president. But if he starts losing Hollywood's biggest star in The Rock, who knows how many more will follow. I'm Joe Concha.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.